This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand.
It was you who shot
J.R.
Can I do, man? Tell me
I got an idea for a show about nothing.
Exactly.
Are you in the mafia?
It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
Well, for this week's TV on the Radio, we're going to talk about Kindred. The 1979 novel by Octavia Butler has been adapted into an FX series. It's about a young Black woman named Dana who lives in Los Angeles in the present, but she's hurtled back to antebellum Maryland, seemingly at random moments.
Am I dreaming? Is this a dream? The day, the year. Tell me the year.
It's 1815.
We just heard a lot of screaming. Is everything okay in there?
Well, Kindred explores race, genetics, slavery, survival, and what it means to be Black then and now in America. Joining me is the showrunner for Kindred, Brandon Jacobs Jenkins. He's a playwright who has won an Obie and a MacArthur Genius Grant. He's also a two-time Pulitzer finalist. Welcome to Press Play.
Hi, Madeline. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to have you. All right. So for people who haven't read the novel, let's get a quick sketch of the plot line. It revolves around Dana. She's an aspiring writer in Los Angeles, very loosely based on Octavia Butler herself. So tell us more about Dana.
So Dana is a young, I guess in our version, millennial or Generation Z, aspiring writer who's kind of decided to strike out on her own and move to LA and pursue a career as television writer. But before she can even kind of unpack this strange phenomenon you sort of began describing, happens where she begins to be thrust back into the past. And at first she thinks they might be dreams, but then it turns out there are definitely more than that. And the game for her becomes kind of first trying to figure out what's happening to her. And once she has a grasp on it, she needs to figure out what to do about it. And it becomes this sort of interesting journey of her understanding the ins and outs of a family history that's more or less been hidden to her, both from family members and maybe by society as a whole. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, she meets a guy named Kevin who becomes a part of this journey. You know, I call this somehow a love story that doesn't want to be a horror story.
So Kevin, she meets in the present day, and in the novel, they're married.
Oh, yeah.
Dana and Kevin. And in your version, they've just met. Kind of the first day or night of their dating, she gets sucked into this time portal and he has to figure out how to handle it. So tell us what you wanted to explore with this relationship. By the way, this is an interracial relationship.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything I'm doing is ultimately in the grain of Octavia Butler's thoughts. I mean, she's just a writer who's been essential to my own like understanding of myself, not just as a person, but like as an artist in that regard. I mean, she made them an interracial marriage in like 1979, which is just a few years out from, you know, Loving versus Virginia. And there was something kind of essentially radical in that representation for her, I believe. And I think that she was trying to build almost a kind of metaphor or allegory for like the racial dynamics of the country itself, a kind of like well-meaning kind of white paternalism put up against this sort of highly individual female kind of digressive and radical voice of color, like radically competent, radically independent. I had this desire to try to find the echo of that in our current situation. You know, early on, I spoke a lot with the estate and they said to me, you know, Octavia would have wanted you to make this for now, make this show for now. I really took that to heart and almost kind of an homage to that. We set it 40 years after when the original book is set, but I felt like our understanding about interracial relationships is actually somehow like deepened and gotten more complex. And I wanted to find a way to explore that in a more contemporary or high stakes way, you know?
Yeah.
I think ultimately for Kevin, this is a story about like what it is to really be an ally, to kind of think of oneself as progressive and ultimately be confronted with the limits of that progressiveness or that progressive way of thinking, or even the kind of story you tell yourself about how tolerant you are, how much you empathize with or protect those needing protecting, you know? They both have to kind of come to a place where they recognize there's a limit to how much they're ever going to be able to understand about the other person's experience. And once you kind of get real about that, then maybe actual collaboration or mm-hmm. communication can occur, you know?
Yeah. So it's interesting that you say that Octavia Butler was exploring well-meaning white paternalism. The Kevin in her novel is 10 years older, right, than Dana?
Yeah.
He kind of treats her, well, he's a little... how would you describe it?
I mean, you know, he wants her to like type up his manuscripts.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, there's a huge thread of that in the book. He wants her to be his secretary. You know, he woos her by buying her a hamburger. He's going to teach her how to be a writer when ultimately he's not that interested in her success as a writer. And I mean, ironically, what this does is it makes the book itself, because, you know, the book in the end, you're led to believe is sort of Dana's book. It's Dana's novel. Mm-hmm. You know, she kind of wins that little bit of a battle, right? She writes the book that's meaningful, that gets made, that gets remembered. I mean, I've also now read this book about 4 trillion times, but people really kind of romanticize the marriage in the book. But if you read really closely, you know, Octavia Butler throughout her whole career was very suspicious of kind of romantic entanglement, or at least had lots of questions and challenges for it as an idea.
And I don't even know if she had romantic entanglements herself.
No, I mean, by the end of her life, she identified as an asexual. You know, early on in these books, I mean, this is my personal critique. And again, keep in mind that I love this writer. But, you know, I think you do sort of see her struggle with how to realistically depict the emotional texture of committed relationships, you know. And I think over the course of her books, you see her kind of let that go and really lean into, like, by the time you get to a book called Fledgling, you know, which is about a vampire who looks like a 13-year-old Black woman, you know, who everyone is obsessed with sexually, you realize she's like completely pushing these ideas of romantic relationships to like the most insane ends.
Yeah. Well, so getting back to this idea also of the interracial relationship and trying to understand who you are and where you came from. I mean, that's obviously key. I don't want to give anything away, but it's obviously key with her journey back to the past.
Totally.
And just the history in this country of white landowners,
right.
Slave owners raping Black women.
100%. Yeah. I mean, the dirty secret of Kindred and I guess the country's history as it pertains to American child slavery is that everyone is related, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like there are no kind of, there's no cut and dry way to divide people. This is an economic system based on like the commodification of female fertility. You know, this is, by the way, something reflected in my own personal history. For example, my grandfather, my father's side, I have a great, great, great grandfather whose father owned him. As he grew older, the father's emotions changed towards him and he paid for his education. You know, that somehow it almost feels like in retrospect, these paternal urges overpower these economic urges, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes sort of like the heart of the mystery of this book, right?
You're related to that slave owner.
Yes, exactly. And my blood runs with the oppressor and the oppressed, as everyone does,
yeah.
right? And when you sort of begin to think of, you know, the very nature of our being here as the product of like all kinds of love and strife, I think you feel more humbled in the face of these histories and these stories.
So when did you first learn about Octavia Butler? How old were you when you first read her?
I must have begun reading her around 12 or 13 years old. I was very much into sci-fi and kind of horror. And I really loved a writer named Ray Bradbury. And
I've
I had
heard
a baby
of him.
Oh, yeah, he's really up and coming, very avant-garde. I had a babysitter who was a pre-med student at Howard University, and she noticed my bookshelf and was like, I think you might like this writer named Octavia Butler, who at that time was pretty much like a well-kept secret.
Until recently, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's really mainstreamed in the last like 5 years,
yeah.
Most definitely. I mean, she brought me these books and they were really inspiring because it was there on the covers were like brown people, which I'd never seen before, mm-hmm. you know, in like sci-fi. And so I, of course, ripped through those books. I became obsessed and I would like run through the city trying to find copies of her books because you didn't really know back then how many books they'd written. It was very hard to do that. I wound up working my way through all of her books by the time I was in college. And that's And one of the last books, honestly, I discovered was Kindred.
Usually that's the first one people read of hers.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, like, I think she won a MacArthur herself. And it wasn't until then that she sort of mainstreamed just a little bit more and a little bit more. But yes, for a lot of people, the entry point was Kindred, because that was the book that was taught on like college syllabi, you know, like women's studies classes were teaching her and African-American literature classes were teaching her. You know, it's like the most literary in some ways of her book. It's like the crossover book, oddly, which she kind of predicted would happen, honestly.
And so a lot of people have thought this should be a movie, or it should be, I guess, a TV series. But definitely people say, why isn't this a movie? Because it is so cinematic. And I'm surprised it hasn't been made into anything on screen until now.
Yeah, I mean, ironically enough, I had the aha moment to try to turn this into a TV series in 2010. And I became obsessed with trying to get the rights. You know, I was telling anyone who would listen, I was like, I want to make this television show, Kindred. This is the one book of hers that's been under option since 1979, since it was published. I remember chasing the rights. And I realized the reason why it wasn't getting made was because they were trying to make it into a movie. You know, one of the great kind of themes of this book is what time's passage does to human relationships and to our understandings of people, right? Mm-hmm. And over the course of the book, spoiler alert, she pops into the life of someone from literally like the cradle to the grave. And the idea of kind of cramming that into a two and a half hour movie, I just think you would lose, to me, what is a lot of the emotional force of the book, you know, which is witnessing them go from children to like adults to parents. And I just feel like that's what television has always done best, better than anyone. I mean, ironically enough, I was the first person to go to the estates and the rights holder and say, stop trying to make a movie, it's a TV show. You know, and I'm glad I did.
And how did you know that? Because you're a playwright.
I had a brief former life. I worked at The New Yorker. I worked in the fiction department of The New Yorker. I got a degree in narrative. And like, I don't know. I've always been obsessed with just story and what story is and form, genres, and what they're good at. And at the time, I mean, 2010, I was in the throes of an obsession with like Mad Men and Breaking Bad. Like that's, I guess, what we now refer to as like the golden age of television. And it just felt like, oh, this is actually, that everyone was like paying attention to that form. Like somehow there was something, you could do things with it that you couldn't do before. Mm-hmm. So it was really just like a eureka moment, I would say.
She definitely had this prescient ability to see where we're living today. So it's particularly interesting to actually see, I guess, see how you're adapting her look into the future, because, or the past, I guess, in that sense. But it's this whole idea of time travel. It's really fascinating. She really did have a vision for how we're living today and these sort of essential questions.
Yeah. I mean, people started calling her a prophet. And I think, you know, one of the things that mainstreamed her was this idea that she had predicted Trump, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's true. Like she was always considered ahead of her time. And so quite logically, it seems that we were the time she was ahead of. But, you know, she said that all she would do is read the newspaper and just logically think through what she felt was the logical outcome to what was happening. She would never have said she was any sort of like psychic, you know, or prophet, but that she was just an engaged reader. You know, it's true. Like Kindred is the one book of hers that is actively about time travel, about going back. And maybe that's why it's the most sort of, you know, mainstreamed or literary one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ultimately she was crafting a really interesting allegory in this book about what it is to lose a sense of one's past and to lose a sense of history. One of the reasons I was interested in setting this in 2016 is because it felt like the last year that we could all agree on what was happening, you know. But I think for a lot of people in this country, what happened after felt like a real backsliding in some ways, right? That we somehow were time traveling to a time that we had assumed we had progressed out of, you know. I do think there's something about this book that's sort of asking us to like rethink that. You know, to rethink that the past is something that's can be escaped, you know, that she, like Dana, has to kind of go through this experience to become her strongest, truest self, you know? And I think that's the lesson for all of us, is we have to take the past seriously, take history seriously. Those who, you know, ignore it or doomed to repeat it, or however that saying goes.
Right. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, and congratulations.
Oh my God, thank you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Please watch the show. Please tell everyone to watch the show.
Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, he is the showrunner of Kindred, which is currently streaming on Hulu. Coming up, Evan Kleiman is here to tell us why we should take non-alcoholic wine seriously. And she tells us about some really good ones. That's next on Press Play.